Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the end of the series of tubes and wires we call the internets is Joe Crazy Rider. How you doing today, Joe?
It is so freaking hot here. I got sweat where there shouldn't be sweat.
Well, it's not that hot. It's only 70-some degrees here in the Twin Cities.
Where you are. I'm sent away on the road.
Is this a big secret you refuse to tell?
Yes. Yes. And I'll tell you where I am.
Hawaii.
Viva Las Vegas. Oh, yeah. Thank you very much. And I got sent here.
You're in Graceland?
I got sent here for a good reason, unlike when I got sent to New Jersey. I don't know. Have you ever been through Vegas?
No.
You've been to San Diego for Hot Redheads, but you've never, ever been to Vegas?
That's right.
Dude, you got to get here. There are more gingers per square mile anywhere else on the planet.
So, hey now.
Maybe Scotland. But,
oh, my.
Oh, my. No, what they're doing is they've got two terminals out here. Terminal 1, which is the big fancy one most people go through, and a Terminal 2, which was built in the 60s and has seen better days. And in typical Las Vegas fashion, they're building a bigger and better Terminal 3, things like a half mile long, and they're going to blow up the old terminal. They actually have some places played the rights to blow it up and film it. Vegas likes to do that, you know.
So, I like watching stuff blow up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So you see, you got the two things.
He blowed up good. He blowed up real good.
To live here. You've got boobs. You got explosions. And you still need the third one. I don't think car chases are necessarily that good out here. But you do have vast stretches of land with streets that you can just blitz on.
And there's poker.
There's that. And there's even comic shops around. I haven't visited.
There are comic shops in Las Vegas?
I haven't visited any.
Do people have time to read comics in between the gambling and the whores?
Oh, there's a lot of things to do in Vegas besides gambling.
There's gambling and whores.
Matter of fact, you can go wander the streets and probably get the shit beat out of you. But most of the comic shops.
Now, careful. I watch CSI. There's a lot of crime in Las Vegas.
Do you think?
And a lot of DNA everywhere.
Yeah,
there's DNA everywhere.
We got to get you out of your little shanty at the bottom of the hill. But
I'll have you know that I live in a van down by the river.
Yeah, and you would get a little worried.
The river's rising.
As I'm sitting at home, I saw Minnesota got blasted by floodwaters. I didn't know if you survived that deluge.
Well, the fun part of it was, you know, I'm doing overnights at the group home. Sunday I come in, and, you know, storms are coming, but they don't look that bad.
Well, yeah, when you look at them on TV, just little tiny blotches going boop, boop, boop.
Well, and, you know, not a cloud in the sky. And then they announce, you know, horrible, horrible weather for where the group home is, and we all have to go in the bathroom because that's the safe place. So I'm in the bathroom with half the residents, and it's supposed to be until, I think, 10:15. Then 11 o'clock. Then 11:30. Then midnight. Now, about 9:30 or so, I go outside and I look, and, you know, there's the moon. There are the stars. It's a little too warm out, but, you know, everything's fine. Everything's beautiful. Everything's great. Don't know why we're in the bathroom, but, you know, got to go by the rules. If there's a warning, we got to go in. 15 minutes later, the residents are, you know, getting really sleepy, one of which falls asleep in her wheelchair. And then whenever she wakes up, she realizes she's in her wheelchair, gets upset, starts to cry. So I have to calm her down. No, it's okay. It's okay. Go outside again. Yeah, still fine. Still fine. About 10:15, I go out. All of a sudden, it's like somebody just took buckets of water and started pouring it on the ground. And there's so much lightning in the air that the sky is constantly lit up. And all I could think is, okay, all right, you were right. That thunderstorm was coming. the next night, the thunderstorm doesn't come till 4 in the morning. So we have to wake all the residents up and get them in the bathroom. And, you know, then after the warning's gone in a half hour, they're supposed to go back to bed. Oh, no, they're up. Everybody's up. It's morning. They're up. And then the power goes out. So I'm there with 12 residents in a group home, 4:30 in the morning, pitch dark, and they're all awake and ready to get dressed and have breakfast. Then I watch, and Duluth just got washed away.
Yeah, yeah.
You even put a picture on Facebook of a comic shop at Duluth that got flooded.
Well, actually, they didn't. Collector's Connection in Duluth, Minnesota, there's a picture of somebody wading in waist-deep water across the street from the comic shop. But I guess when the guys were able to get to the comic shop the following day, they didn't have any water damage, so they were able to open up.
Well, good. Because water and paper products do not mix well. Here's your amazing fantasy 15. It's a little water damaged. It's dripping. It's very fine. Not near mint. It's very fine because of the water. So anyway, you were about to tell us about the comic shops in Vegas.
No, I can't. I haven't been any yet. One of the things I'm doing here is as they make the transition from this Terminal 2 to Terminal 3, we had to get trained on the equipment, and we're covering the checkpoints and the baggage area. And locals then go over to Terminal 3, and they get familiar with that layout, and we're still at Terminal 2. But even as we speak, they're starting to move airlines either to Terminal 1 or Terminal 3. So in about by next Thursday, and we're recording this on a Saturday, everything will be empty. So if you're going to fly Terminal 2 Vegas, or you're flying like Hawaiian or Atlantic Virgin or wherever, a lot of things in Terminal 2 are international. So, and I don't know if we have many international listeners, but double check, make sure you know which terminal you're going into, because it's going to be a ghost town. No one will be there, and then they'll blow it up. No one will blow it up.
Yeah, but wouldn't it be fun to run around and, you know, play like zombie hunting in it before they blow it up? I'm actually amazed that no one has decided, hey, we'll film some movies in there before it blows up.
Well, that's what the people who blow it up are going to do. They got the rights to film it. So whether inside, outside, I mean, remember, what was it, the end of Die Hard 2 or 3? They had the big casino or building blowing up that they blamed on them. It's that type of thing.
Oh, yeah.
So they get to film it, and then they can use it however they want.
Okay.
Nothing goes to waste in Vegas. Nothing.
So what have you been doing other than working?
That's pretty much it. Just working. I got my normal stash of stuff to keep me entertained. Doing a lot of Facebook. Well, when I was in New Jersey, I went and saw the movie Battleship.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. I was kind of disappointed. I was hoping for an Independence Day type thing. Just, don't think about it. Just sit down, have some fun. And there were a few moments that were pretty kick-ass. But what I picked up based on some people online talking about it is the novelization, because it was written by our favorite comic scribe, Peter David. It wasn't necessarily that I need to see a rehash of it, but Peter has a way of embellishing what we didn't see on the film.
And having it make sense.
And I figured that would be worth enough to plunk my money down. So I picked up that book. I picked up another one of the Star Trek Typhon Pack book. This one's called Plagues of the Night. And a brief recap for those of you who forget. If you're not reading the Star Trek books, they basically, since they're probably not going to return to the characters we know, such as Picard, Janeway, all them fun guys, they've taken the Star Trek books and they've just continued their own continuity. And we've talked earlier, there was a big Borg war, entire federations in disarray. And so the Breen, the Klingon, or not the Klingons, but the Romulans, the Breen, the Tholians, and the Gorn and some other two other groups, which I think they made up for the books, have formed the Typhon Pack. And what they're doing is they are kind of a response to the Federation, because the Federation, they're worried that the Federation is growing too powerful, and then they see their opportunity. And the books have been kind of interesting because they cover different things. One's kind of an espionage book because they invented this thing called slipstream drive, which allows you to go to the Delta Quadrant in a matter of days rather than, you know, like Voyager, it took what'd they say? It would be 70 years. Yeah, to come home. Well, now with the slipstream drive, you can get there, but it's very advanced. It's very technical. It's very dangerous. And of course, the Typhon's Pack doesn't have it. Some of the different things going on in the background, they've sent a fleet back to the Delta Quadrant to make sure that the Borg are indeed done. So that's one set of books. One of my favorite sets of Star Trek books are I can't think of what they're called. It's when they put Riker on a ship that's filled with different life forms.
So Titan. Aren't those the Titan books? Titan,
thank you. And I really enjoy those.
See, I'm good for something.
Yeah, he got involved with this. This latest one, I haven't started reading yet, but it's Federation and Klingon Empires, allied under the Kittimer Accords. This one almost sounds like it's more of a political thriller than anything. So that's on the pile. You know, this almost sounds like
funny books?
Freaking. Do we have a sponsor for Geeking and Freaking?
Why, yes, we do. Geeking and Freaking is actually brought to us by BartCop at BartCop.com, the finest in left-wing political humor. He does a new page about 3 times a week where he mocks the news, has a lot of political cartoons, has little contests. And if you become a subscriber, he's got over 170 radio shows to download and listen to. So that's BartCop at BartCop.com. Here's his ad.
Hi, my name's Bart, and I got a little radio show over at BartCop.com that we call it the Tequila Treehouse. And on the radio show, we talk about a lot of things. You know, we talk about sports, and we talk about sex, and we talk about TV, and we talk about movies. But really, we're not talking about those things. We're usually talking about the politics of the sports and the sex and the TV and the movies and that. So if you go to BartCop.com, you might get to hear a sample. Actually, the radio show is for the subscribers, but now and then we open it up to the general masses, or we play some snippets on there trying to tease you into subscribing. But that's over at BartCop.com, the Tequila Treehouse. Try it. You might like it.
So Geeking and Freaking, what are you geeking on, Joe?
Well, other than the things, what I'm currently reading, you know, other than the piles of things I've got to read, I'm still going through the Babylon 5 interviews, the echoes of our conversation. This will be a 5 or 6 series book you can get through Cafe Press. It's available now. And basically a gentleman who did interviews throughout the entire process of making Babylon 5. And he talked to everybody. I mean, you're not just the actors and Joe Straczynski, but the makeup artist, the costume artist, the people behind the scenes, the producers. And he's putting them, I believe, in kind of a chronological order. And it's kind of a fascinating read behind the series. One of the most interesting things that Straczynski did with Babylon 5 is after his experience working Captain Power, he came to the realization that one of the problems with sci-fi on TV is it's so expensive. And the reasons it's so expensive is because nobody is properly controlling what's going on. It's like, okay, we're filming this episode, and then it goes to post-production, and then we film this episode, and it goes post-production. So what he did is I don't know if he devised it or him and his co-producer figured it out. Yeah, you can have different episodes doing different things at different times, but you need one person to kind of lord it over all of it and make sure everything's going. And for 5 years, that's what he did to get Babylon 5 on time, under budget most of the time. And so far, I'm reading up through season 2, and everything's under budget. They decided to use computer graphics, which was a very I don't know if it was controversial or very eye-raising at the time, because back then everybody used model, which was very expensive. It's just interesting to go back and read the interviews, knowing how everything turned out. And plus, they give you bonuses, too. They give you a disc with interviews with the actors. Volume 2 is signed by Bruce Boxleitner, both in a personalized message and then an actual autograph in it. And they give you a couple other neat things, like some postcards, bookmarks with memorable quotes. It's not cheap. They're $50 a pop, and if you sign up for their list when they first come out, they give you like $10 or $20 off. So it's kind of a fun thing. Back to you, Corey. What are you geeking on?
Well, the first thing I'm geeking on, the Ends of the Earth, the big Spider-Man, first of the big Spider-Man summer stories, just wrapped up. And it's Spider-Man versus Dr. Octopus. They go all over the world. It features the death of, I would say, a minor superhero who's been around for a long time. Very, very well done story. And it really shows that Dan Slott is building his stories one after the other, because it does play off the, do you remember last year when Spider-Man declared no one dies? That after J. Jonah Jameson's wife was killed, mm-hmm. he was going to do everything he could to make sure that no one died around him, that he saved everybody. Well, he fails. And that's an important part of the story, and probably big going into the next story, which is good, because I normally when they do the Spider-Man says something like that, like, I'm no longer Peter Parker, I'm just the Spider, or you know, other declarations he's made, they last about a month or two, and then it goes back. Slott seems to be making very permanent changes to the character's status quo that fit, rather than, we're going to give him organic web shooters and spikes that come out of his arm. Nope, he's building Peter Parker's character, which I think is far more interesting than any sort of power changes or stuff like, or a new costume. The other thing I'm really liking is Peter David's run. There's Peter David again on X Factor. We're getting about 2 a month, and it's got a huge cast. This book's cast, I think there are like 12 major characters. And the way he's writing it is, okay, we're going to focus on these characters for a while. All right, now we're going to pull over and focus on these characters for a while. Now we're going to, and each one he gives you a solid superhero story, but also some really good characterization and his trademark witty dialogue. Really, really enjoying that. And the other thing I'm geeking out on is something that isn't comic related at all. Joe, you're supposed to go, what?
Well, yeah, I assume you got a life.
I'm reading a book called Collapse.
Wait,
Why
no
Civilizations.
Pictures?
No pictures.
You're so weird.
It's a book about why civilizations fall apart, why the Roman Empire fell, why the Incan and Mayan civilizations fell, and what we can learn from them as we move into a crisis time in our civilization. And the one thing that really the author hammers home a lot is that fresh water is the lifeblood of civilization. And when that starts to get hard to get your hands on, nothing else matters. And then he points to what's going on in the Southwest, where you are, and how we're starting to see fights over water between California, Nevada, and Arizona. He also goes to civilizations like Bolivia and a lot of developing countries where companies have come in and bought the rights to the water and are jacking the price 4 and 5 times what it was before they bought it. And it's very worrying, but also talks about solutions, talks about what you can do, how this has been avoided in the past. I'm really becoming kind of a history buff as I read more and more books like this. There's Mark Twain once said, history doesn't repeat, but it rhymes. And I know a lot of people who say, oh, history doesn't repeat itself. History doesn't repeat itself. It doesn't repeat itself exactly, but these authors are showing that if you don't learn those lessons, you can get the same results. And it's better than a zombie apocalypse novel because this one's a little more realistic. This one you can actually see happening. So what are you freaking on, Joe? What don't you like?
Actually, I don't have anything here I don't like. I've got piles of stuff I'm ready to do. I've got my Beatles Yellow Submarine Blu-ray copy.
Now I hear that they found some missing footage that they put on the Blu-ray.
They may have. I know the last time on DVD they restored it to the way they originally wanted it.
Hey Bulldog?
Yeah. But I don't know if they did anything else beyond that. So I'll have to check that out when I crack it open. I did finally get the $6 Million Man pilot movies and season one. I based that off the fact, as I mentioned earlier, I bought the Bionic Woman, I think it was season two, where they actually had crossovers between the $6 Million Man and Bionic Woman. And, you know, I was always fearful that it wasn't as good as I remembered as a kid. And it was okay. I enjoyed it, so I figured I'll pick up the $6 Million Man. I know season two is out already, but I'm like, you know, they're cheap enough. They came out at $30, and then, of course, within a few months, they dropped to $15. So I'll pick them up when they do that. I did pick up one book, and I haven't started it yet. But you got to love the title. Why does Batman carry shark repellent?
That's from the guys who do the comic blog, Comics Should Be Good.
Yeah. Brian Cronin is listed as the author. And, of course, he says a list from Mark Millar, Gibbons, Jeff Johns. So that book I'll probably start reading once I finish the Babylon 5 one.
And then, his other book was on Comics Urban Legends. And I think the title of it is, Was Superman a Spy? I've read that book, and it's really good. He takes the columns he did online, expands them, has more information. It's a lot of – somebody will send in a question based on a comics urban legend, and he will research it and find out if it's true or not. So I'm really looking forward to reading the shark repellent book.
I think he did another one too, but I haven't picked it up yet. How about you? What are you freaking on?
Well, the first thing I'm freaking on, my beloved Mad Men season is complete. And while it did not end on a cliffhanger, it was a very solid ending that left a whole bunch of questions for next season. And we don't know when the next season will be. Now, with most cable shows on like FX or AMC or whatever, it's, if they start in October and run for a while, the next year they start in October. With FX, it's, you know, Sons of Anarchy starts in September. And then after Sons of Anarchy is Justified. And then after Justified is... But with Mad Men, they went 18 months between seasons 4 and 5. And we know the show's been renewed through season 7, but we don't know when season 6 starts. So I'm freaking about that. I'm freaking about not... Ah. And the other thing I'm freaking about, I've been reading the new Marvel Zombies story. Because I read on Peter David's blog that he was writing it, and I picked up the first two issues, and he didn't write those. He does pick up from issue 3, and after reading issues 1 and 2, I can see why. Because what a god-awful mess it was. It seems like a simple story. Marvel superheroes go to a universe where Hitler won World War II, and everybody there's a zombie now. So, hey, superheroes versus Nazi zombies. Sounds good, right, Joe?
You throw in some cheerleaders, a couple pirates, maybe some robots, some aliens. Yeah, now you got something going.
Okay, who's the leader of the team that goes over to fight these zombies? Howard the Duck.
Now we're talking.
I thought so, too. Howard the Duck, very cynical, the way Gerber wrote Howard the Duck, he was very cynical. He wasn't really an anti-hero. He was always kind of dragged into heroic situations. and in trying to get out of them would do the right thing. Oh no, not in this story. In this story, he's like the, he's the drill sergeant telling everybody to be gung-ho, and that's not Howard the Duck. Whoever the writer is fundamentally did not understand the Howard the Duck character. Basically, it was, the drill sergeant from Full Metal Jacket as Howard the Duck. Thankfully, Peter David came in with the third issue, and the story makes a lot more sense now. He kind of shoved Howard way to the side, which was good. And the story makes sense. So in a way, if you want to read it, pick it up with issue 3, because the first two issues were terrible. The other thing I'm freaking about is what we're going to talk about for the main part of the issue, Joe.
We are?
Yes. We're finally going to talk comic sales.
Hang on, let me get some caffeine.
You know what the number one comic is going to be next month?
Walking Dead.
And did you hear what the rumor is of how many issues they may have sold?
300,000.
How many issues of the Avengers versus X-Men number one sold?
I didn't hear that one.
About 170,000. So Walking Dead number 100 sold almost double Avengers versus X-Men number one. I think that's great.
I'm just wondering how many of those issues will be read versus how many are going to be, oh, I got variant covers, or I'm speculating, or, hey, guess what next month's quarter book's going to be?
There could be a lot of that. I remember
what were the sales on issue number 99?
The sales aren't out yet, but the prelims are that it was, it sold over 50,000 copies and maybe in the top 20.
And then the question also becomes, how many are going to be in issue 101?
Right.
Because this is just a bump to bump. Now, this is based on pre-order sales?
Yes.
Okay. And the other thing, too, is if they make this a good jumping on point for a lot of people, I mean, how much – well, I suppose you do need jumping on points when you have a cast of I can't know. I'm only in the late 80s, so I don't know how many people are left alive. But you have a cast of tens, maybe, that don't get eaten all the time.
Yeah.
So.
One thing about Walking Dead that if you follow sales charts like I do, and, you know, there are like 7 of us who do that, about a year ago, Walking Dead was selling around 22 to 24,000 copies a month. Then the TV show hit its second season, and sales have been jumping by 5 to 10% a month. And now it's at 50,000. This is a black and white indie book. It's outselling most of Marvel and most of DC. Comic sales are up 40% over last year for May 2012 was the headline at the Beat. They didn't dig into the numbers. They just had the preliminary information. Marvel did really well because that was the first month of Avengers versus X-Men. But if you look at all the other Marvel books, they're pretty much still at their same level. If they're not tying into Avengers X-Men, they're selling around 40 to 50,000 copies. With DC, the 52 effect has almost completely worn off. They've gone,
just on a side note here, do you follow the links on the MCBA's Facebook page?
Yeah, I do.
They posted one from Bleeding Cool News. They're talking about DC Comics has a survey that they're coming out.
Yes.
And originally, they're giving it out in comic stores, the Midtown Comics back in New York. But they, Bleeding Cool, posted a link to the survey, and I actually took it. And if you're interested, check it out. It's Midwest Comic Book Association. They got a Fall Con coming up in October. But it's the DC Comics that doesn't exist, Orange Ivy, and their new Nielsen survey. You go to that, and then there's a link, and as of the 23rd, it was still active. I don't know how long it goes, but you go and you put your email, and a typical survey, they'll, you know, get some demographic information, and then they ask, real interesting what I found, I can't really influence the survey if you choose to do it. They have all the DC titles, and they ask, did you buy it? Were you going to buy it, but you didn't? Didn't plan to, don't care, didn't know about it. And then they really get into, did you buy a digital copy? So I think they're trying to gauge the digital copy. And then they also ask, you know, where did you buy your stuff? How did you hear about this? You know, pretty typical survey stuff if you've ever taken one. But I find it interesting. And also if you want, I could always throw a link up on our Facebook page, not that anybody visits it.
And you should. Come on. Yeah, be our friend. Like us.
Please. We want more than 54 friends. Or is it 65? Let me look. Anyways, if you want to go give a direct response to DC on how you feel other than, you know, by buying stuff, this might be a good way to do it.
One of the charts that I look at is average periodical sales. That's average sales across the line. For DC, when they did the 52 number ones, their average sales across the line were 57,000 copies, which is the highest they've been in years and years and years. Now by April, it was down to 31,000 copies, which is about the average they had in 2008. So while DC needed to do something to bump their sales, they've really only bumped it up by, they've bumped it up by about 20%. So all of the money, all of the work, all of the changes, the advertising and everything, they were able to bump their sales by about 20%. And it's decreasing every month to where most people say by August they will be, if trends continue the way they are, by August they will be back where they were at this time last year. So my first question is, all those people who came in and bought those number ones, where did they go? And Joe is a shop owner. I wanted to ask you, when there's a big event like Superman dying or... Well, this was years and years and years ago.
His body was coughing up blood.
I didn't even know he was sick. Yeah, we're going to steal every joke they had on WrestleCrap Radio since they're going away.
Yeah, what do they care? So. They probably don't even listen to us.
But the people who came in for the big events, not the ones who came in because they saw the ad or any of that, but there was a big news story and, this comic is huge. How many of those people did you ever see again?
I'm trying to think of what, other than the death of Superman, I don't think we really had a major league event. And, you know, you figure we sold thousands of copies of that, and I only had at most 200 people that were there. I mean, we had 300 people that wanted Superman titles. And by the time it was over, I think our subscription was down to about maybe 200 people. And by the time I sold the shop, I think we had about 150 people that subscribed, you know, where they would actually come in week after week, month after month to get books from me.
Now, that's not subscribed to Superman. That's subscribed.
That's everybody. But we probably had maybe 100 to 150 people that just wanted the Superman book. Some people wanted the story up to it, and they stuck with it until they stopped publishing. That doesn't count the millions and millions of fans that just walked into the store that day. And we, you know, again, we almost have to have like cliff notes or, you know, footnotes like they do in Marvel Comics. Please refer to podcast number 7, where we talked about the day Superman died, because that was, you know, there were people just literally, they came in, they picked up a copy, they walked out, you know, didn't care about anything else.
there were other news stories. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but there were other news stories where, oh, this comic's in the news, and people would come in, they would buy it.
Alpha Flight, issue that was in the news.
And it's almost like they were impervious to sales.
Sometimes,
you know, they'd buy that book, and you'd say, oh, if you like that, you ought to try this. Or you'd have stuff. We'd make a display, especially for movie comics. When a movie would hit big, we would, you know, put together a display. If you like this, you'll also like blah, blah, blah. And it seemed like that people would just ignore whatever we did. They'd buy the one book and leave.
Yeah.
And it's why I always... The comic companies are always chasing free publicity. You know, Captain America dies. Be ready.
Yeah.
It's going to be a story in the New York Times, and they're going to cover it on CNN. And that one issue sells. People don't come back. They don't stay on for the long ride. They don't come back for the next issue. They come in, they buy that. They don't buy anything else, and they leave.
Well, the other thing, too, and we talked about this, is like, when the Captain America died thing came out, or the Spider-Man Unmasked, that came out months before it actually happened. And then we're always questioning how many people came back, if anybody. You know, it's like, oh, you hear about it. When's it out? Oh, it's out in 2 months. You know, it just, I mean, and that was something you'd probably have to check. We could check with maybe Nick over at the source. And, you know, because I know they ordered extra copies, and I know they sold out, but was it a case of, I think the source is more proactive in it, where they'd say, well, it's not out yet, but if you want to leave your name, phone number, we'll call you when it's here. But that's the problem is it's kind of a two-edged thing. Even the whole Marvel DC thing, we were hearing about it in June, and it didn't happen until September.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the Marvel versus DC. They got all sorts of press. You know, they were on all the cable news channels. They had articles in the local paper and national articles and stuff. But then when the comic came out, it seemed like, well, it's the same people. I don't see anybody new coming in. And
it's
part
like
of it was
comic book day too. I mean, how many hundreds of, not thousands of copies do they give away? But is there actually a bump in sales other than, you know, the day of the event? You know, like I said, when I had the little store, what I would make in that one day would equal what I would make in an entire week, if not more. And some places where they actually do an event, like the source, I mean, they literally, I mean, that's literally like an extra 2-3 weeks of revenue for them, because they make a deal about it. They don't necessarily put a lot of things on sale, but it's just a lot of people come. And, you know, this year they had the new, were they in the new shop when the?
Yep, they were in the new shop.
Yep. So they had a lot of stuff going on, you know, and even when I was in New Jersey, I didn't even try to get to some of the shops that had Free Comic Book Day going, because it was just, it would have been just too crazy. That, and I worked Saturdays, so.
I had a very dear friend who lives in London. She went to Forbidden Planet, and she said she went mid-afternoon, early afternoon. They were already out of all the free comic books.
Mm.
And even with that, would people come back? The one example I can have, and I know Free Comic Book Day is a lot of fun, and we've talked about it before, but I really don't think that it helps sales. And the best example is Atomic Robo, one of my favorite books. They've had a free comic book every year on Free Comic Book Day. They've given away like over 120,000 copies. Their sales are stuck at around 5,000 copies a month, no matter what. That means 120,000 people have gotten their hands on Atomic Robo, read it, and not given enough of a damn to go back in the shop and buy the book. But it's not all doom and gloom, Joe.
It isn't?
Nope. With comic sales up 40%, the article on The Beat doesn't dig into it. I dug into it. And part of it is The Walking Dead trades. The Walking Dead trades are really skewing everything. But where the most growth is happening is in indie books. Indie books and creator-owned books. That's why I wanted to bring up Walking Dead being the number one book and selling 300,000 copies. You're seeing more and more creators. We talked about it a couple of months ago. There was a creator at DC who said that he was done with DC because of how they treated creators. And we've already discussed that. But very quietly, more and more creators at Marvel and DC, at the end of their exclusive deals, are not renewing them. They're going over. They're going to work with publishers like Image and Dark Horse and other ones. And the main reason is they see Robert Kirkman is set for life. With one book, he's got all these sales. He's got a TV series. Because of that TV series, he's now creating books, and they're being optioned immediately. Thief of Thieves is on like its fourth or fifth issue. AMC is already wanting to do a series of that. Going back a long ways, look at Cerebus. Dave Sim owns it. He can do whatever he wants with it. The book never sold more than 10, 12,000 copies, and toward the end it was selling about 4,000 or 5,000. But he owns it, so he's got the books. And the books still consistently sell. He's working now on digitizing all of that so that he can sell them digitally. He did this book, and he's made a living off his one book. You're seeing more and more creators who are saying, you know, why do I want to work at Marvel and DC? I know the deal there. I know that when stuff sells, I'm not going to get anything. Robert Washington III, the creator of Static, passed away recently. He was homeless. Static had a cartoon. It's continuously been used. He got no money for that. There are a lot of people who work in comics who are really shook up by that. They're kind of freaked out that, hey, this guy created something that got a TV series, and at the end of the day, he didn't have anything. I think the growth in indie books is the best thing that can happen to comics. That's my read on the sales figures. The other read on the sales figures is Marvel's getting ready to do a big shakeup in October. Nobody knows quite what it is. Some of it has to do with Bendis moving over to the X-Men and the Marvel Cosmic stuff. There's also some other changes coming. And we don't know what will be the end of Avengers versus X-Men. They're promising something big. But DC is showing that even if you jettison everything and start over, within a year or so, you're back to where you were. I don't know. I would not want to be a comic shop owner at this time. I have not heard if
there are comic shops. I don't think I'd do that anyways. You know, like I said, the big thing that was weird on that DC survey thing is they were real concerned about how many digital comics did you buy, you know, from DC? You know, and again, yep. I have not bought a digital comic. I've toyed with the Marvel thing in the back, but I haven't gone gleefully peeling back my covers to get the free digital copy because I don't see the purpose of it. There's been times where I've thought about, you know, dropping $50 or whatever Archie wants and getting total access to their stuff. But I just don't read comics online, you know? I mean, I did bring my Star Trek, the complete comic book collection DVD, but I don't put it in just to sit back and read. You know, if I want to read a comic, I go get a comic. If I want to read a paperback, I get a paperback. If I want to read a newspaper, give me the USA Today or whatever. If I want to read online, I read online. You know, there are different media, different feeling, different sensations to do things. And my choice to do comics, which I may do after we're done podcasting, is I'll run down to the comic store. I'll come back. I'll go sit down by the pool, sit in the shade, of course, because I'm from Minnesota and it is about 100 degrees out here. And even though it's dry. Yeah. Even though it's dry, you still sweat.
You know what it means if it's a dry heat? An oven is a dry heat too.
True. I'll have my drink in one hand, my comics in the other, and it's kind of windy. So I might have to bring maybe a donut to hold the comics in place. But,
yeah, because there's nothing better than a donut stain on a comic.
Yes, I'm tired. Why go for the black fingerprints? I just go for something else. Anyway.
I will recommend the Marvel, I think it's called Marvel Unlimited. No, it's not Marvel Unlimited. Whatever it is, Marvel has a thing where you pay a certain amount every month, or you can pay a lower rate for a year, and you get access to all their digital stuff. It's amazing. You want to read the first 200 issues of the Fantastic Four? There they are. You can read them panel by panel, or you can look at them as a page. You can read every appearance of Thanos up until, well, basically up until he showed up again in Avengers Assemble. Want to read them all? They're all right there. I really love their all-you-can-eat model. Sounds like Archie's got the same thing. I'm shocked DC hasn't figured out how to do that yet either. In a way, it's almost like the Netflix model. And I think for older works, it's perfect. I don't know what you watch on Netflix, but I'm at the point where I don't watch a lot of movies on Netflix. Because the movie's going to be available on Netflix streaming for the next 5 weeks. You know what? I'll just watch a TV series, and I can watch the whole series. All the Star Trek series are on. I'm probably going to watch Deep Space Nine. I haven't seen it since it was on. I remember it being really good. I want to watch all of Deep Space Nine again. Why don't I go buy the DVDs? Because each DVD set is like $75 to $100 each. Oh, okay. I'll just watch it on Netflix. Netflix even has stuff that wasn't put out on DVD. The second season of Better Off Ted is available on Netflix. They didn't put out the DVD of that. I know a lot of people who are now watching Lost. Comic book companies have this huge archive of old stuff. And they know that when they publish the hardcovers like the Masterworks and the Archives and things like that, it's a limited audience. The Masterworks sell about 2,500 each. Doesn't matter what they put in it. I've looked, and there's very little difference between a Spider-Man Masterwork and a Kazar Masterwork when it comes to sales. They sell about 2,500 copies. Just open up that archive. You've digitized the stuff anyway. The problem with that is, as more and more people move to digital, and digital's kind of, the problem with digital for people like us is once you get into it, you're pretty much hooked. My mom, she has an ebook reader now, and her and dad, they would go through books like you wouldn't believe. They had stacks and stacks of books. It's probably where I got it from. They got e-readers. They haven't bought a book in a bookstore in almost a year. Oh, I could download a book from the library. Oh, I'll read it there. Oh, I could download. I touch here and the book's right there. They're consumers. They're not collectors. And I think as time goes on, you're going to see more and more of that. Which is also a really good thing for the independent guys, because they can say, well, Mark Waid's doing it. His website, he's doing digital comics, releasing some weekly. He's going to do some monthly. Some are going to be when they're completed. It's a really exciting time to be a comic reader, but as a retailer, I would be scared to death. It's almost like you're a typewriter repairman.
I almost wish I had the capital to open up a company and just swallow up all these obsolete industries. You know, it's like, yeah, we can repair your typewriter. We've got a few people that can do that. Or Polaroid film, sure, we'll make it for the few tens of hundreds of people that still want it. But yeah, just all this stuff just disappears.
Oh, another thing that I finished reading.
Oh, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter?
No, I haven't read that yet. I finished reading Irredeemable. The Mark Waid, Peter Krause did most of the art, and I don't remember the name of the artist who took over after him. Have you finished reading that one, Joe?
Which
one? Can you get the last issue, Irredeemable?
No, because I haven't. I only picked up the Peter Krause issues. And I've been on the road since, so I haven't been able to pick up beyond that.
The premise of the book is basically, what if Superman turned evil? And the final issue came out, and I still don't know how I feel about the ending. I recommend the book overall. It took a few weird turns that I didn't much care for, but I wonder how much of that was, okay, we're running a series. We know how it's going to end. Well, we need to figure out a way. We need to put a story in here that doesn't delay, that can delay the ending. But boy, those first 15 issues were amazing. Just amazing, amazing stuff. Joe, when you get done, remind me and we'll talk about the ending.
I actually read the ending. It didn't actually make sense. So I figure once I go back and read the missing issues, it'll make sense.
And now, another one of our little special things, Tales from the Shop. Tales of the Shop currently doesn't have a sponsor. But guess what, Joe?
What's that?
It's going to have a sponsor within the next few weeks. And if you would like to sponsor a segment or sponsor the show overall, send me an email at corey.strode@gmail.com, and we'll work out a deal. So, Tales from the Shop. I want to talk about the big crossover events. We're in the middle of Avengers versus X-Men. Big crossover event tying into other books. Batman just had Night of the Owls, and DC is building up to a big crossover event. I forget what it's called, but they're building up to a big crossover event. So there's a crossover event I want to pick your brain about, Joe.
What's that?
Back when comic sales collapsed in the 90s, Marvel and DC got to the point where their sales were in really crappy shape, and they sat down with each other for the first time in ages and said, let's do a crossover. And it was Marvel versus DC. And I mentioned it a little earlier. One of the things about Marvel versus DC is the fans got to vote on who would win the fights. But I wanted to ask Joe how he ordered it. Because you knew it was going to get big play in the press. Wizard was going to be spending issue after issue on it. But I wanted to know how many people pre-ordered it. How many did you order for the shelf? Reorders. How did that crossover work? Because I imagine Avengers versus X-Men is pretty much the same way.
I don't remember the numbers because I'm thinking we probably went over 100, if not more. And I think we had a lot of interest in it in terms of everybody on it. Because we, you know, certainly with Wizard blopping stuff out and, you know, we had advance warning it was coming.
And one other thing I'd like to say about it before we go into it, the creators on it were not big names. You know, Ron Mars was a kind of a solid writer, but he wasn't, it's not like people would come in and go, I want the Ron Mars written books. Peter David, he sold stuff, but again, it depended on the character because he had stuff that he had his name on that sold and stuff he had his name on that didn't. I don't even remember who the artists were, but it's not like they grabbed George Perez or John Byrne or Jim Lee or a bunch of big name artists. They were pretty standard artists. Now, at the time, you said you ordered about 100. How many X-Men?
I don't remember the numbers. All I know is, you know, we had most of the regular subscribers ordered it. And we stocked a lot on the shelf. I don't recall. Did they do second printings?
I don't remember.
I don't recall a second. Not, you know, like today, it's like if it sells out right away, they might even have the third printing in the pipeline before the first printing's even out. But I don't recall. I don't think we sold out because I think we went. Boy, that was a good question. I wish I could remember because I don't think we sold out. You know, because back then, There was a time where DC actually, or I think Marvel was first, but they actually put in a program where, like, if you knew, Captain America 25, I'll order 25, boom, all of a sudden there's all this advanced press. And with the advantage of computers now is up until the time they start printing, you can adjust your orders up and down. And the publishers were real resistant to do that. And I think Diamond was too, because it was always, oh, more costs for us. But the big complaints were, yeah, we're going to have a blockbuster sellout event and I have no way of getting more issues, or they're sold out, or I have no guarantee they're going to show up. And then you still had 2 weeks to go. Well, now it's like, okay, Jim Lee suddenly decided he's off Justice League with issue 3. Actually, I'll do you one better. Valerie the Bat, if you remember that issue.
Yes.
There was issue, was it 3 or 4, was going to have a crossover with Spawn?
Well, number one was mail order only, right?
I think originally it might have been, but I do recall getting
it. And then number two was the Spawn crossover.
Because, no, I think it was 3 or 4, because what happened was is the first couple issues came out, and then McFarlane decided to pull out because, you know, Spawn's getting way too overexposed, you know, and you're like, say what? You're talking basically, like you said, issue 1, I might have ordered 10, 20. Issue 2, I might have ordered the same. But issue 3 and 4 with Todd in it, I was like, well, okay, I'm selling 120 Spawns. I'll bump it up 120. And, you know, my plan was just put one in everybody's Spawn box, and if they didn't want it, they could put it back. Although at the time, you know, you probably wanted it, you know, based on the Spawn Batman crossover. Actually, cut that for a minute. What happened was then Todd pulled out and said the character wouldn't appear, and then was it Kimiko? No. Continuity.
Yeah, continuity was.
They said, "Well, we're not going to allow people to change the orders."
Well, of course not.
And then people went,
look at the amount of money they made.
Yeah, we went nuts. I mean, you could have heard, you know, the moon shake from that distance, because it was. I think that's when they started the, you know, if there's a major change in content, that the orders will be adjustable or returnable.
I know why that changed, Joe. And you will too once I remind you of it.
Hmm.
They didn't do it because they wanted to. They didn't do it because of retailers being angry and upset. They did it because Brian Hibbs sued Marvel and Diamond over Marvel changing creators, changing the stories, changing this, changing that, and not allowing orders to be changed.
But that didn't actually settle until after I sold my shop.
Right.
Because I remember sending Hibbs a note saying, okay, you know, I sold my shop, yet I got caught in this. And he never responded to me, because what I was supposed to get was like flyers good for a certain amount based on, I think it was called the Brotherhood or whatever.
Yeah.
These books were. Marvel came out with a bunch of books. And, I never did get that. And when I talked to Kristen over at Hot Comics and New Hope, she did get hers. Because the idea was, what about the people who have gone out of business that got caught with these books? And the court order said that they were supposed to get these coupons, and I could turn around and sell it or trade it to another comic store.
Right.
And for whatever reason, I never got it. And, you know, at the time I was out of comics, and, yeah, it would have been nice, but it wasn't a deal killer. But that's what the beginning.
You were sitting at home baking bread, watching the kids, being hooked on Oprah.
I was. Yeah. I remember that was the summer. I sat out back, drank lemonade, and read all the Harry Potter books. Kept the kids out of daycare. Thought, hey, this ain't so bad. Did a lot of eBaying. Of course, I had stuff to eBay back then. But now, the other thing about the Valerie the Bat, the reason why Todd pulled out is because he did the Batman Spawn crossovers. So the question was, what are you going to work on? Or do your work on a little tiny, know nothing book like Valerie the Bat? I mean, you know, hot looking chick in a bat outfit, or DC with Batman. And then, of course, the interesting thing about it was, is there were two. There was Spawn Batman, which was done by McFarlane, and I believe Frank Miller did the art. And then something called Batman Spawn, which, oh, sorry, I had that deathmate reaction.
He's gonna puke!
One was
He's gonna puke!
Batman, or DC. And of course, the cool thing was is that the Spawn Batman actually had kept in the continuity of the Spawn books, because, and again, if you want to throw a spoiler warning up, fine, but you know, it's not, we're talking about, what, a 20-year-old comic? Maybe 15. Anyways, at the end of the book, I think it was Spawn was trying to make friends with Batman, and Batman sunk a batarang right in the middle of his head. And then for Spawn took a shoelace and basically put his head back together. And so for months afterwards in the Spawn comic book, you had Spawn sitting there when his mask was off. You'd see his face crisscross with the shoelace down because of what happened in the Spawn Batman crossover. And that also led to the toy Hamburger Head Spawn with the Spawn with his mask off. And then there was a version, there was three versions, mask on, mask off, and then a mask where he had the crisscross scar. You know, so what happened in the Spawn Batman mattered in the regular book. In the Batman Spawn, I don't even, the DC version, I have it. I think I've tried reading it, and it just sucks. So I didn't even bother. In case of one-upmanship, I think McFarlane won that one.
Yeah. Now, Diamond changed stuff, but it was more voluntary. But obviously it wasn't good enough. I'm reading up a bit more on it now. Diamond made the change, but it wasn't enough to satisfy Hibbs. So Hibbs went to court, and the court agreed with them. Because I think you could only change your order a certain percentage. And I would have to do more research, but you could only, you know, you could only raise or lower it a certain percentage up until a certain date. Whereas now, because publishing is all digital and you can literally change your order up till the day before they print. And I forget when that is.
It's pretty close. I mean, sometimes it's,
yeah,
it's of a, up within a couple weeks of the book coming out. So you can go up and down. I mean, towards the end of my run with the comic shop, I would, at the end of my preview orders, you'd get a thing saying, okay, here is a list of items, and 99% of it was always independent books that are they're being adjusted up or down because of late shipping or changes. They didn't say why. Most of the stuff I didn't change because there were special orders anyways. DC didn't do it much because DC basically, if something changed, they took returns. They're really big. I mean, that was basically it. Every week, even when I had the small shop, I'd take the same list and say, okay, DC wants this stuff returned. And then I would look to see, A, did I have it? B, did I want it? Because sometimes, you know, if it was a main title, you'd probably want to keep a few issues, just for back issues. But if I had a stack of 10, I might return 8. Marvel was very, very proactive on this front.
Because they lost the lawsuit.
Not at the time. Remember, they didn't.
Not for the small shop, yeah.
They hadn't lost. Yeah, by the time the small shop was, but they hadn't lost it then. But I think what they did is they realized they were wrong. So they started doing all this in probably hopes to say, okay, judge, you know, yeah, we're right. Here's what we're doing because of it. But, it, you know, then I would look at it too. And I'd, you know, you'd say Amazing Uncanny X-Men. We'll pick on them. I wrote 125 copies. They're reducing it because it's late or whatever. And that was the most infuriating thing, because a lot of times you didn't know why. But then I would look at my book and I'd say, well, I got 100 pre-orders and I got 25 for the shelf. I sold 20 with 5 left. I'd leave it. Or in a case of maybe a book just dramatically drop, I'll give you a double example. And I think Rob Liefeld did a 2-issue spread on Teen Titans when I had the small shop. And nobody wanted it. I mean, guys who would collect it, just put it back. They said, don't want it. Rob's doing it. You know, which, I don't know. I found Rob Liefeld's art entertaining for what it is. I mean, it's like going on a roller coaster, you know? Yeah, his leg is anatomically broken above his head. And
he doesn't draw feet.
Yeah, you know, I just accept it. If Rob draws that way and you buy a Rob book, that's it. But for Titans, people are like, okay, he's just doing a two-issue fill-in, and people put it back on the shelf, you know? And I had the opportunity at the time, because I don't know if it was announced or unannounced or what it was, to drop it. And then later on, DC took him back anyway. So, you know, it's one of those things that every week they look at that.
Well, back to the question.
What question?
Marvel versus DC. Was it successful for you? When you think back on books that well and books that didn't do well, is it one of the ones that did well?
Oh, yeah, big time. Although now it's largely unreadable. But back then it was fun. Oh, they also had that thing where you could call in and determine who wins.
Yeah, you know, and people had to give you their votes.
Although Nick told me a thing when it was Superman versus Hulk. And Nick told me, he was talking with DC, and he's like, you're telling me that if Hulk outdoes Superman, you're going to do it. And Nick said that DC guys, there is no way Superman's losing. Because we debated the whole thing, like, because I think they did a thing where Lobo and Wolverine fought and Wolverine won, and we're all like, oh, come on now. Lobo punches planets into Superman at the time.
Yeah, Lobo can go toe-to-toe with Superman and just barely lose. And then Wolverine beats him up behind a bar.
Yeah. So, unless he got Lobo drunk. I don't know if Lobo, you know, Wolverine, they've established Wolverine can't get drunk because of his healing powers. I don't know if Lobo can get drunk. If he could, maybe you can take him down. But the rematch would be ugly. What I want to know is if you can remake Wolverine from a single drop of blood, what if you have 100,000 drops of blood? Do they all go back? Seriously,
I'm surprised that no one's done that story yet.
I would make that. I would call this Planet of Wolverine. Just somebody happens to run across it. It happens to be a planet where, yeah, they made one single drop of Wolverine blood, and it made the Wolverine we all know and love. But what about all the other blood that was left behind? And it all grew up, and now you got a whole planet full of Logans.
It's kind of like Madrox and Multiple Man, except you know what the bad thing is, Joe? Wolverine would no longer be the best he is at what he does. He would just be tied with all the other Wolverines. And they couldn't use that anymore.
No.
And you thought the crickets weren't showing up this week.
I was worried. I'm always worried your cat's going to get them. Or Sharon might get,
No.
Sharon might get hungry and just have them in the middle of the night thinking, ooh, cream-filled crunchy potato chips.
No, they have their own little special place to hide at night. And Fidget tries to get into that closet, but she has yet to grow opposable thumbs, so she can't get in.
Yeah, believe me, they're mad about that. They're working on evolution to get that going.
You know what? I think cats are evolving faster than we give them credit for. I'm finding on YouTube all these things of cats talking. You know, there's the famous Olong Johnson cat, the no-no-no cat. I think eventually cats are going to be able to, you know, you'll wake up one morning and your cat will go, get out. Get out of my house. That's why you keep hamsters and other rodents, because they got a longer way to go up that evolutionary ladder, don't they?
Well, that and when they die, you can just flush them.
I don't know.
All the time with the guinea pig
clog the toilet?
No, they go down pretty good. But guinea pigs are going to fall. Seriously, I put a pat of butter
on
guinea pigs and it just sat.
You hear that, Joe?
My daughter thought it was a baked potato.
Joe, do you hear that?
Oh.
Yeah, that's PETA knocking on your door.
No, they're busy up in Lake Superior trying to sue the zoo for criminal charges.
Now, my sister called because she saw that the polar bear escaped, and she asked if I'm living on the Lost Island. I said, no, that's up in Duluth.
No, polar bears in Como Park Zoo. It's a lot closer to you than you think.
Yeah, but have they escaped?
You'll never know until it knocks on your door.
That's why I go with Dave Shearer's advice. Somebody knocks on the door, if you don't know who it is, you don't answer it. Might be a Jehovah's Witness.
Or it could be a vampiric polar bear. I learned that in Barrel.
Have I told you that the Jehovah's Witnesses and the Mormons don't knock on my door anymore? Have I told that story yet?
Story time.
Okay. About 2-3 years ago, for some reason, all these religious groups had decided to descend upon my house. I would get Jehovah's Witnesses. I would get the Mormons. There were these two nice old ladies from some other church. And the two nice old ladies from the other church, we had a discussion because, as we've talked about, I'm an evil heathen atheist who's going to burn in hell forever. I was told that repeatedly at the group home in one of the group homes I worked at. But we had a nice long discussion, and no, they did not change my mind. And the guy I do overnights with, every so often, he kind of tries to, he tries to use logic on me to get me to switch my mind on it. But the Jehovah's Witnesses and the Mormons, I just wouldn't talk to anymore. I would just go, no, I'm not interested. No. Till finally, one time, the Mormons knocked on the door, and I opened the door, and you could tell the Mormons because it could be the hottest day in history, and they've still got the white shirt buttoned all the way up with the black tie, although they'll wear short sleeves during the summer when it's 90 some degrees out, and the long black pants. And they, we'd like to talk to you about religion. Oh, no, thanks. I already have one. Oh, what religion are you? And I told them that I'm a Jedi. And one of them said, that's not a real religion. And I said, neither is yours. You believe? And I went down the list, and I could see them getting more and more uncomfortable. And since then, the Mormons have not knocked on my door.
I don't think I'm going to knock on your door.
I think that I got put on a list, Joe.
That could be.
The Jehovah's Witnesses, I look outside and I just don't open the door for them. Now, my dad actively hated Jehovah's Witnesses. He would run them off when they would knock on his door. Me, I just don't open the door. Now, I got to ask, because I haven't been to Vegas, but I've been in California. Now, all around the U.S., if you go and there's you open one of the drawers, there's a Bible in the drawer of your hotel room. Placed there by the Gideons, which Bill Hicks has a wonderful routine about. But when I was in California, you get two books. You get the Bible, and you get the Book of Mormon. Joe, do you have the Book of Mormon?
I did, but I'm not sure where it is. I think I'm using it as a doorstop somewhere.
Now, what if you and I, if we won the lottery, we win one of those 100 million, 200 million. If we do like the Gideons and we decide we're going to put a book in every hotel room in the nation, and it'll be a comic. It'll be a comic trade paperback.
Battle Royale, the deluxe version. It's got everything. Violence, explosions, boobs. I don't think car chases.
Teenage girls in schoolgirl outfits.
Yeah. Well,
not seriously, well, Joe. If you get to pick one comic you could put in a hotel room, what would you put?
You tell me yours. I got to think of something.
I would put Batman Year One. I think that's probably the art is beautiful. The story is one that everybody kind of knows, but there's enough there that it's interesting. It's not a long read. I think it would convert people. I really do. I think Batman Year One would convert people, just like the movie Batman Begins got people to watch Batman again after the god-awful Batman Forever and Batman and Robin movies. I would go with Batman Year One. Joe?
I was leaning towards Watchmen, just because that seems to be a good all-around package. But, you know, you probably want something that wouldn't offend everybody. But being, I'm kind of at a crossroads right now, because there's been a couple things that have popped up that Torxio Krayoff.
Uh-oh. See, you said you didn't have anything you were freaking about. Now, well,
not
now
comic,
the truth
not
is
comic
out.
Related. But
doesn't
it's,
matter.
It's
I,
what like,
my freak up is about Mad Men.
You've
been holding
like
back.
What it is
been
you know,
holding back and lying to me.
If you believe in numerology, and you might as well, it makes about as much sense as everything else. I worked at Sears for 10 years. I had my own comic store for 10 years. I'm coming up on my 10th year of working with TSA. Just recently, they said that the TSA wants spyware so that they can screen digital archives for leaks. In other words, they want to go into, they want to be able to watch what I say, what it, when I say, go into my personal emails. They say they're doing
about
this.
Time somebody did.
They want to make sure that, you know, our plans and what we're doing to combat terrorism isn't leaked, or, you know, because the whole government is shooken up about this Wikipedia stuff. And TSA
WikiLeaks,
has got this.
Not Wikipedia, WikiLeaks.
This, yeah, it's Wiki something. They can leak all they want. But they're, it's like the whole government's just gone nuts. And the problem is 90% of these guys who are running this stuff, they have no idea what social media is. You know, Facebook, podcasting, internet, they're scared of it because they don't understand it. So what they're doing is they want to get software that can monitor, well, Microsoft Windows, but they'll probably do Apple's too. They want to be able to monitor user activities through keystroke monitoring, chat monitoring, email monitoring, attachments, websites, network activity, you know, and they want to do it all without tipping anybody off. It's basically Big Brother stuff. And, you know, that stuff's out there, but now they want to do it all on employees. And that, you know, part of me is like, well, you know, I'm sure glad you guys trust me enough to train me on what to do and how to prevent terrorism. And then you're going to watch me like that?
Well, somebody's got to watch you, Joe.
Why?
And your wife's not doing it.
It can't be that exciting when I download hardcore porn. Why don't you go get your own? Take your Google search off and go live a little. But then there's other things that, like the FDA earlier this year ran into trouble because employees sued the agency for allegedly bugging the government computers. And see, if that's the case, just government computers, that's fine. I don't have a government computer. And when I'm at work on a government computer, I don't do dumb shit there. You know, I don't eBay.
You don't download the hardcore porn there.
No. I just look at the stuff they've captured. You know, evidence, of course. But that's a joke, people. Anyways. What happened was is that the FDA, some of the people did whistleblower things because the FDA approved unsafe medical devices. The FDA using spyware intercepted screenshots and opened up legally protected personal emails of the employees involved. And then, of course, they retaliate against these employees, even though we're supposed to have whistleblower protection. And the FDA lost that because that's the type of bullshit that they're going to run into. TSA employees don't have whistleblower protection, at least not codified into law. We've been told we have it. So basically, if I see something that TSA is doing that could possibly cause a plane to go down and I whistleblow it, I'm on my own. I got no whistleblower protection act to protect me. So now I've got TSA going to be spying on me to make sure that I don't narc out that these guys are doing something wrong. You know, there's even a report of a government employee got a note from somebody not even related to them, like in a computer office on the other side of the country, objecting to the fact that he was using a password that was obscene words. You know, I'm kind of like, what does that got to do with any job? So it's kind of like, what did Pogo say? Paul Kelly say, we've met the enemy and he is us.
And it is, he is us.
It's just, you know, it's like they're going backwards, you know. So I may be gone in 10 years. I've been working 10 years, you know. So it's just disheartening, you know. Here we're, I'm working hard to try to do it, you know, stop the bad guys, stop the, now I'm like, oh great, now my own guys are spending more time watching me than they are watching for the bad guys. Very disheartening. Might be a comic book in there somewhere.
But at least they sent you to Vegas.
Yeah, and for a good reason, too. Like I said, we're going to help them open up the Terminal 3. So that's kind of fun.
Well, believe it or not, kids, you've wasted about an hour and a half of your life listening to us ramble on about funny books.
Ramble on! I can't do that. I've got to pay royalties if we do too much of that.
And complaining about our jobs.
Yes.
Although I did complain about my job, even though I'm sexually harassed every night.
Yours was done by the weather.
Yep. But Joe, next time she grabs my behind, should I just start yelling I need an adult?
Nah, just enjoy it. It's probably the only thing you're going to get for a while.
It's the only thing I've gotten for a year as is. So, as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic you like the most.